welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
We are. We seriously are, right? And if you have children that are under 28, all right, then you feel like that's chaos. So I asked on Facebook the other day of share a chaotic, did I say memory or experience? Memory. So and I think it got lost in translation. What I'm looking for is when you hear the word chaos, is there a memory or an experience or something you witnessed that, like, when you think about chaos, is there something that comes to mind? And are you willing to share it publicly? That's the key part. Lauren. You just dropped your mug? This is a church, Lauren. Yes. Was it chaotic? Yeah. You dropped your favorite mug? Your mom's? Now you're in trouble. No longer is it chaos. Okay. All right. I thought you dropped the mug like right before I asked that. Or like you heard chaos and you dropped it. Okay. Or is your mom's favorite mug the neighborhood mug? No, it's not. Okay. Does anyone else have a chaotic memory? You're living with yours right now. Yes, Kristen, I hear that. And I get the privilege of seeing everything that's happening up there. If there's any smoke, I will let you know. I promise. Hi, Eleanor. Is there anything you felt like chaotic? Chaos. When your parents got divorced, all right? That's very true. It's still, yeah, you're an adult. Doesn't matter, right? That can feel very chaotic, okay? Anyone else? Hunter? Your mental health stuff, absolutely. I'm going to be sharing a story. If everyone's been in that space, you feel like you know which way is up or down, it feels chaotic. Family reunions, yes. I missed mine this year just to avoid the chaos, right? Yeah. What do you mind if I ask you, what feels chaotic about family reunions? So the people. She said the planning and the people coming. Yes, yeah, so people, yeah. Yeah, it's stressful, right? Okay, anyone else? These are good. Yeah, Dana? Lots of memories are chaotic, yes. With the addiction in your family, chaos was normal, okay? Okay. All right. Did everyone hear that in the back? All right. That Dana said that growing up, love that you're just standing right here. All right. She talked on chaos being your family. You grew up with it, with addiction being your family, and even the quiet now feels uncomfortable. Yeah, yeah. Addiction in your home for 56 years. Yeah. That is absolutely chaos. And you're here. And you're here. All right? Has anyone ever read the book Running with Scissors? Yeah, it's a story about addiction and growing up in a home with addicts, and there was just no rules, and it was, like you said, it's chaos. We're continuing our series in Psalms, and we're spending the summer on this because Psalms can speak to both joy in one part, and at the end of it, it can talk about wanting death and destruction for your enemies. It can talk about the beauty of the world, and then it can talk about mountains falling into the ocean. And it's great because the Psalms are meant to be chaotic because it's a reflection of real life, and real life is chaotic. This past week, I was at a show at an outdoor venue. Some friends are playing music. And there was kids running around everywhere. And I was sitting next to my friend Bree, and her kids are now adults. And I looked at her, and I said, do you ever miss this? kids running around. Like, it's chaotic, right? It's chaos. And she's like, do I miss the idea of having little kids, or do I miss having little kids? I'm like, oh, the idea of little kids. She goes, yes, I miss the idea of having little kids. And I had this like moment of that chaos of having little kids is you don't sleep. You're stressed all the time. I remember going and checking to make sure that they're still alive when they're sleeping, all right? And I had a friend that talked on saying, when did you start going to this event? And she goes, well, we are cutting up our kids' hot dogs and grapes still. I'm like, that is the perfect way of describing of having little kids. I saw a parent at the airport. They're loading their luggage, and their probably 2 or 3-year-old got out of the van, walked around the car, walked by another adult, and then just was like in the middle of the street of in front of the airport, which is a fairly busy street. And the kid was just living his best life. And I'm like honking the horn, and I'm pointing. The dad like gave me the finger, and I'm like, I'm not telling you to get out of the way. I'm saying, I'm like your kid. And he's like, oh, sorry that I did that to you. Right? Little kids is chaos. That's on one end of the spectrum of chaos, right? And I like that. I miss that. But then the other end of the spectrum of chaos is mental health. I had a winter where I didn't sleep or I barely slept. I had really, really dark thoughts, and I felt trapped, and I didn't know which way was up and what side was down. And if you've been there, you're trying to, like, at least I'm like analyzing myself over and over and over again, right? I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have that thought. I wonder what I should do about that. Oh, I'm too tired to actually do anything about that. Is that a problem that I'm too tired to do anything about that? I should probably do something, right? It's like it just compounds, and it just feels like chaos. And what got me through it? Therapy, the Bible, Modern Family TV show, Frasier TV show, honestly, right? Like, there was a bunch of things that helped me, and there's a bunch of things that didn't help me, but it was when you're in a chaotic place, you don't know what to do. This is the Bible. This is the Psalms. This is spirituality. We have this idea of that spirituality or life, the older we get, the easier and more money we should make and more friends we should have and the deeper experiences. Maybe we should start swimming in waterfalls, and maybe you get into birding, and then you're like really into World War II stuff. Like, the older you get, right? It's just this continual like trajectory of easiness, and you understand things more, and the Bible makes more sense, and none of it's true, right? The older, at least I've got, maybe you're different, right? The older I've gotten, there's things I've gotten clearer on, but the clearer I get on things, the less certainty I have on a bunch of other things. And actually, where I'm at right now is chaos is just a part of my life. It's just there, and I don't always want it. I'm not the biggest fan of it. But there's sometimes I welcome it, because what other option do I have? I'm either going to let things be my teacher, or I'm going to resist and fight and push back, and sometimes I need to, and sometimes I don't. And in Psalm 46, it's all on chaos. And the way they start and the way they end couldn't be further apart, which is a very healthy conversation you might have with a therapist, a friend, maybe a great, very smart, brilliant pastor, maybe as well, all right? But when you can be in the moment with chaos, it doesn't need to define you, but also can, like, be a part of your journey. So it's not going to be terribly long, which is everyone's favorite words when a pastor is talking, all right? And at the end, the way we're going to end, the way that we're going to have worship today, because worship is just our response to what we know to be true about God and our experiences of God. That's all worship is. If that's true, if worship is just a response to knowledge and experience of what the divine is, music is an expression, but so can really expensive grape juice and very expensive cheap crackers, all right? And we're going to take a time to practice being in the chaos through communion. So here's Psalm 46. Oh, I actually have it up on the screen so you guys, I can prove to you that I'm using the Bible on purpose, all right? It's a very good thing. All right, Hunter, can I... In the middle, you can't say no because I'm doing this publicly, I just realized. Would you mind just, as I read it, just go to the other verses? And you can't see it. It's all right. Yeah, you'll see it on the screen, Hunter. You just got to click on it. Yeah. No, it's on there right now, Hunter. Oh, no, now go back. There we go. You got it? Verse 1? better. Let me help you. I got it. I got it. Verse 1 is one of these then. I thought I had it in order. There we go. All right. Psalm 46 in the NIV. God is a refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at the break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms fail. God lifts their voice and the earth melts. Verse 7. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see that the Lord has done, the desolations they have brought on the earth. They make wars cease to the ends of the earth. They break the bow and shatter the spear. They burn the shield with fire. Verse 10, they say, be still and know that I am God, and I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. So, this psalm starts with this idea of God is this fortress, or not this, God is our strength. And then it talks about there is these mountains trembling, there is a sea that is foaming, there's a sea that is turning, and even the mountains, the hills seem to be like quaking and shaking and slamming into the sea. This, what they're starting with, is absolute chaos. And they use the sea, right? Ancient writers use the idea of the sea or the ocean or Chub Lake, right? As this untamable body of water that you have no control over. You have zero control. All you can do is if you're in the middle of the sea, you're in the middle of the old mighty Mississippi, is all you can do is respond to it. You can either succumb to it or it takes you over. That is it. And this is a way of a metaphor or forecasting to the or foreshadowing to this idea of there is real pain, grief, loss, chaos in real life, and you might think you have control, but you have zero control. Have you been here, or maybe you met these people, right? I'm friends with several of their one. If you're familiar with the Enneagram, any Enneagram Bobos here? All right? They're ones on the Enneagram, which means if I do everything the exact right way, the outcome will be the exact right way. If I am in control, then everything will go into the way that I want it or need it to be, and I'll be able to overcome it. This is not true in any shape, way, or form, right? Because we think, if I can make all these external changes, then that will bring internal changes. And the truth is, there is some things that are in our control of what we, how we use our body, what we put in our body, how we respond. But then we go to, well, if I just had this job, if I had this amount of money, if I had access to these resources, if I can get into this circle, if I could just lose this much weight, then, right? And fill in the blank. And how many times, like, I talk about this often, and I'm surprised how easy I still find myself of like, well, man, if I can just run one more marathon, then I think, right? And in my head, these are things I think of. I'm like, then I'll be able to what? Brag more that I ran a marathon, right? Like, how do you know that someone has run a marathon? They have the shirt, right? They have the medal, but the joke is, don't worry, they'll tell you, all right? You can put in CrossFit, you can put in, all right, sobriety, whatever it might be, right? There's things that we feel the need of, like, just, I need to tell you something. Maybe because you feel proud that you overcome it, right? But even if you do all these things perfectly, chaos is still absolutely present. It can be present. The only way that we can really find lasting change is if we're willing to do the internal work. And this is what the psalmist is getting at. Even amidst of all this chaos, the thing that you really want is never going to pay off. Instead, it's this inner resilience. Walter Brueggemann, who is this, who recently passed, brilliant theologian and scholar, and he says that this whole psalm is an anti-empire psalm. This whole idea of in empire, there's going to be things that give you promises or give you an idea of safety and security. And what he says is it just rarely is it ever going to happen. Instead, the where you're going to find contentment, where you're going to find value is within oneself. And in the psalm, it goes on in verse, oh, no, I can't skip this part. Imagine this. I wrote something brilliant. The upheaval in the chaos and all that's happening, invites us to seek a hidden spark of holiness within the chaos. It's not a God. It's not a God that removes chaos. It's not a God that protects us from chaos. It's not a God that shuts down chaos. It's a God in chaos. And the difference is radically different. The idea of recovery, right? For me and many other people, but for me, my journey is I can do the work of working through the chaos of what I feel. I can do the work of working through the chaos in my other life where I used to use alcohol as a way to numb myself or even just to get through it. That chaos was there if I was drinking or not, right? I get to decide, is there a God who's with me in my chaos? That maybe I don't need this substance, I don't need this person, I don't need this idea. I can have a God that says that I'm enough exactly where I am of when it's going good and when it's not going good. There's a God who doesn't just automatically take me out of the chaos. There's a God who's with us, which means this. You are not in control as much as you think you are, which gives you permission to stop shooting on yourself, right? I learned this from Jen, not Hatmaker, Jen, the Moxie coach. Thank you, Jen Birch, right? Is that we don't need to should on ourselves, because when we're in chaos, we think, oh, I should have went on that vacation, or I should have saved that money and not gone on vacation, right? I should have worked out for the past 5 years so that when I go to Wisconsin Dells, I look really great. That's what I was thinking this morning, right? I'm going to Wisconsin Dells right after this. I'm like, oh, I should have done those sit-ups, right? Whatever it is, but that's even that, right? It's funny, but even that is this idea of I'm a better human. I'm more secure. I'm more being liked, more being believable. People are going to want to talk to me. People are going to want to laugh with me because I might look a little bit different than I currently look. That's an idea of shooting myself. That's an idea of shame. And we live in shame and things we don't always can control. Like the chaos that's happening in your life, in my life, it is just being human. It is just life. So then it goes on to verse 3 and 4. It says, or 4 and 5, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is with her. She will not fall. God will help her at the break of the day. So here we have female pronouns about the city of Jerusalem, right? Which is this this idea of this beautiful place where God dwells. Where God dwells isn't a place that uses the divine feminine, which is brilliant. Because the Bible was written by men, for men. Whatever you think, like, yes, can it speak to women? 1,000%. But it's written by men to men. And so it's misogyny, patriarchy is absolutely informed in the Bible, right? Most sacred literatures, it's that way. But here, they're using the divine feminine, and it should be a red flag, or not a red flag. It should be like a exclamation point. That's a better way, right? Of saying, why are they using this idea of the divine feminine with God in a very male-orientated Bible and world? Because they're not afraid of it, right? It's not a threat to this author. What is a threat is how men are very much today and for a very long time. Of they're saying, well, you know, God can't be a woman. Why is that? Why is that so bad? Maybe it's because the way the men think about women. And they don't want to be associated with the way that they think about women. They don't want to be treated like the way they treat women. In the New Testament, Paul talks about the idea of the church is the bride of Christ. Like, who the church is this very feminine expression. I don't see that as a threat. I see that as something as beauty and as strength. And actually, what the words that they're using here in the city of Jerusalem and these rivers flowing, it is a picture not of a fortress. You think of Babylon, which would have been informed when they wrote this. When you think of Rome, when you think of Game of Thrones, to be a little bit more relevant, or House of Dragons, right? Or Lord of the Rings, you think of a fortress, you think of a stronghold. It's going to have these big walls. It's going to have all these symbols of strength, places where you could dump like tar and feather people, all normal stuff, right? And here, the strength of the city is much more of a womb. It's much more of a place of transformation, of healing, of growth, of rest, instead of one of conquering. This, again, is this anti-empire message of where of life and strength is found is not in how we usually think of it. And actually, I promise you, Dana, I went to Bible college, I went to seminary, and I just learned something about the Bible. When they talk about rivers in Jerusalem, right, it says, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God. There's no giant rivers that run through Jerusalem, right? I just read that, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, because there's water flowing. The rivers here is a metaphor of what brings life, of what brings strength, is this inner stream. It's this inner consciousness. It is this inner contentment, meaning if where God dwells in the city, which makes it strong, is not the fortress, it's not the walls, but it's a womb where life and creativity and things can grow and things can expand and things can evolve, then the strength isn't in a God who pushes the chaos out. The strength is something within. It's something deep within. It's something in our breath. It's something in our bodies. It's something of where no matter what happens out there, there's a God who is Emmanuel, a God who's with us. This flips the narrative of when there's chaos, we need to go stop it. If you ever had little kids, right? Like when I was little, me and my brother would always want to wrestle. And no matter, even if we could be like playing, but as soon as we would touch each other, my dad would reappear. He'd be at work and all of a sudden he'd show up. He'd be like, get outside, right? It's like there was no wrestling inside, right? And guess who did the same thing with their kids? This guy, right? Because it's a way of saying whatever's going to happen. And my dad had, 100 brothers. So when they would start wrestling, the neighborhood would burn down, right? It's this idea that we can control chaos. And what the psalmist is saying is chaos is life. And there's times where it's more and less. And the way the psalm ends, it says, be still and know that I am God. Psalm 46, verse 10, I believe. Starts with the sea, mountains falling into it. There is this city where it's not strength, it's not the fortress in this womb. And it goes through all this language of God's hand and moving and doing all these things. And where it ends then is be still and know that I'm God. To be still is counter to the chaos. It goes against all my parental instincts is just to get quiet. Man, there was this one teacher who worked with the kids in this church I used to be a part of forever ago. And my son Cole was, I don't know, one, two. And he was in this phase, if you have any little kids, of where he just wanted to hit everything, right? He just wanted to punch and slap. And I was very frustrated because I was teaching him like he was like nine. I'm like, stop hitting. He's like, I don't know words. I don't have a concept of language, right? And he didn't really say that, right? And what this person taught me, he's like, this is really good. He taught martial arts to young kids. And he said, actually, Chris, what you can do is model what stillness looks like. Model what calmness looks like. Like, actually play how you want them to play. And so Cole would be like swinging his head, trying to hit me with a hockey stick, right? I think Nikki was missing a couple teeth. And what I'd do in those, instead of getting angry, I'd get with him and we'd play with the ball, we'd play with the hockey stick, we'd play with whatever it is, and we'd practice being gentle. We'd practice being still, which I think is a great metaphor of when it says, be still and know that I am God. To be still takes discipline. And how do you know something? You only know things by being in relation to them. You only know things by playing. You only know things by trying this and trying this and seeing what works. It's in that stillness. It's in that rest. It's in that conscious decision of slowing down that we can be okay. Because whatever world things are happening out there, they're going to happen. We had a couple that was probably 20 years older than that. One of them just passed recently, and we were at this wedding, and it was the groom's dinner, and we're sitting down. We don't know anyone. I'm officiating the wedding, and in walks Boyd and Margot. If you know Boyd and Margot, they're just wonderful, and they sat down, and we're telling them this traumatic story, and it was really hard on us and our family, and it caused a lot of pain, and we're telling them this story, and I'm thinking the response is going to be like, oh, my God, are you okay? I can't believe the chaos. I can't believe the injustice that happened to you. And instead, they looked at us, And we got done, and we're crying, and we're like snot and everything. And they just had a flat response. They're like, yeah, is that it? And we're like, is that it? Oh, right, we're going to have a book written about us someday. And they, right? And they looked at us and said, you guys, this is not even close to the hardest thing you're ever going to experience. We were 35. Yeah, 36, 37, right around there. And like, this is not even close to as hard of a thing you're going to have to endure someday. They're like, you're going to be okay. And instead of being angry, because I felt like, it's like, I don't feel like you even understand me, right? Our brands do not align. And instead of that, right? Instead of that, I was like, oh, maybe they've walked through some stuff where they can be still and not feel like the mountains are falling into the sea because of our story. We have friends for that. That's why you have friends, right? They're like, yeah, let's go slash their tires. You're like, that is illegal, but thank you, right? Sometimes you need people who are a little bit further down the road from you who can look at you and say, yeah, it's really hard when your water heater breaks out. You don't have $2,000. You're going to be okay, right? This being still is something you have to work on. It does not come naturally. So with that, we're going to end our service. And we're going to practice for a second as a way of playing, right? This should be a playground. This should be like a sandbox. This should be a gym of where we try, this might be a horrible analogy, but even like a changing room where you're trying things on to see if they fit. Here you can try different practices, different words, different expressions, different concepts. Because of all the places in the world, the church should be a place of where you can maybe not get it always right all the time. So we're going to take communion as a form of worship, as a form of practicing, finding contentment. And I'll share this. For me in the past, I don't know, 3 months, I felt something, and in no way am I slapping myself on the back. But I just felt something click inside me. And I don't know what it is. I can't point and put my finger on it. But I remember looking at Nikki saying, I just feel different. I feel some sort of contentment. I just feel of this chaos that's happening in the world, politically, culturally, whatever you want to put it. Even within me, I've been able to just get this place. I'm like, yeah. Yeah. Like my kid's moving out. Right? My 19-year-old's moving out. And I'm like, I have a lot of feelings, and I'm going to be okay, and he's going to be okay. And then we had, instead of a water heater, it was our well pump broke. I'm like, ugh. In the past, I would have gone to the dark, dark, dark place because of the money and how we're going to fix it. And I'm like, oh, that happens. We own a home. It's old. And I caught myself. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I think I'm growing up. Right? And honestly, I'm like, I think prayer, meditation, reflection, whatever word, I'm like, I think it actually works. As a pastor, I should already be there, right? And I'm still surprised of the things that this complicated, sacred, conflicting, magical, beautiful book that we call the Bible and the wisdom of the conscious eternal Christ might actually can bring some levity and hope. So, we're going to take communion as a way of remembering what Christ did for us, as well as a way of practicing contentment and being still. Yuli, you do me a favor? Do you want to bring this upstairs for me, please? Can I trust you with a bucket full of grape juice? There you go. You got it. You're going to bring it right upstairs to anyone who wants it, okay? Thank you. Eleanor, would you like to hand out the crackers to everybody? Okay, you can just walk around and they can grab their own cracker. All right, or if you want, you can lick all of them and hand it to people too. We're going to practice chaos. Can you find, I was joking, don't lick them, right? Nope, you can start down here and then go upstairs. All right, and then we're just going to pass this around. I would ask Wally to help, but he's a baby. Just take one and pass it around. Oh, let me get one too. I count. Thank you. And before you consume the body and blood of Christ, have a short reading. Is the juice being passed around? Oh, there it is. I thought you... Sorry, I saw you like bending down looking at it. I thought you were holding on to it. And if you don't want to take communion, it's totally fine. You don't need to be a member of the church. We don't have any of those prerequisites. All right, did everyone get juice and crackers? Kristen, do you need crackers up there? Kristen's like, doesn't matter. Crackers, no crackers. Eleanor, would you mind running those upstairs too, please? Oh, I'll take one too. I keep forgetting. I count. Thank you, Eleanor. All right, as you are in possession of your juice and crackers, these do have gluten in them. I was supposed to say that in case you already ate it. I'm really sorry. Oh, thank you. Did everyone get juice that wants juice? And kids, when we're all done, yep, you can bring it up here, my man. When we're all done, my favorite part of Communion Sundays is watching the kids at the end just crush all the blood of Jesus. You haven't got one yet? Throw it right up here, my man. And then you could take one. Oh, you can put it right, that works too. Anywhere you want. You got one? Okay. After I read this, we're going to take a quick pause of silence. At any point, you can take the communion. And when we're all done, I'm going to pray. And then I'm going to put music on. And we can go about the rest of our weekend. Thank you for being a part of Neighborhood this Sunday. In a world full of noise, uncertainty, and unrest, we pause at this table. Not to escape the chaos, but to remember that even here, God is present. Be still and know that I am God. Not a command to ignore the world, but an invitation to trust that we are not alone in it. On the night of chaos, pressed in around him, Jesus took the bread, gave thanks, and broke it, saying, "This is my body given for you." He took the cup, Wally, and said, "This is a cup of a new covenant. Whoever you drink it, whenever you drink it, remember me." So we come to the table not because we are certain, but because we are invited. Not because this world is still, because stillness is possible. Thank you.